my heart, from my mind, from my strength, I will worship you.
Joshua chapter 22. The book of Joshua is a book about the Israelites taking the promised land. They had been delivered from slavery in Egypt. They wandered through the wilderness, and then they began this process of conquering this territory that God had promised them. We've talked about how similar some of those processes are in our lives. How God has promises for us. God has a kind of life that He has for us. He has things that He wants for us, things that are different, taking us out of Egypt. He's got a promised land for us. And so they're at the point where they have conquered the majority of the land, and it's time to send all the armies home and for everybody to start settling in. Now, before Israel had crossed the Jordan River into the promised land to begin this conquering, they had first conquered the territories. I don't know if you recall this. It's been a little while now since we talked about Sihon and Og, the Amorite kings, and how they had conquered their territory. They were the guys that were located on the right side of the Jordan River. And after conquering that eastern territory, two and a half of the tribes of Israel kind of liked the place. And they came up to Moses and they said, hey, we kind of would like to settle here. The idea of this promised land is cool and all, but we kind of like this area. Can we divide up this area amongst ourselves? When they first came to Moses, when these first two and a half tribes came to Moses, Moses was kind of concerned at first because he was remembering back, you know, almost 40 years when he had first sent spies out into the land and they'd kind of were checking it out. And I don't know if you remember the story, but I think it's like Numbers 13 or so. When these 12 spies went out and checked out this land, 10 of them came back with a bad report. They came back with news about giants in the land and it was going to be a terrible place and we don't want to go there. And they discouraged everybody's hearts. And so when these two and a half tribes come back and say, well, we're not sure we want to go into this promised land. In Numbers chapter 32, why don't you turn to Numbers chapter 32? Keep your finger in Joshua. Just turn to the left a little bit, a few pages, back to the book of Numbers chapter 32. And we're going to start in verse 14. Numbers 32, verse 14. It's important to kind of set the scene for what happens here in Joshua 22. In Numbers 32, starting in verse 14, Moses says, and look, you have risen. This is Moses speaking to these tribes. He says, look, you have risen in your father's place, a brood of sinful men, to increase still more the fierce anger of the Lord against Israel. For if you turn away from following him, he will once again leave them in the wilderness, and you will destroy all these people. See, he's afraid that if these people just kind of stop, that they're going to discourage everybody else, and they're going to say, look, we just lost all this whole big portion of our army. It's like almost a fifth of the army almost. How can we go on if we lose all these people? The tribes, in verse 16, they answer Moses with a promise. Verse 16, it says in Numbers 32, 16, then they came near to him and said, we will build sheepfolds here for our livestock and cities for our little ones. But we ourselves, the men, will be armed, ready to go before the children of Israel until we have brought them into their place. And our little ones will dwell in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return to our homes until every one of the children of Israel has received his inheritance. For we will not inherit with them on the other side of the Jordan and beyond, because our inheritance has fallen to us on this eastern side of the Jordan. So these tribes came back to Moses and they said, we're not going to abandon you. We just want to eventually settle here. We'll go help you conquer this land. Well, Moses said that if they do what they promised, then he liked this idea of them settling in this other side, this eastern side of the of the land. Look at Numbers 32, verse 20. It says, "Then Moses said to them, 'If you do this thing, if you arm yourselves before the Lord for war, and all your armed men cross over the Jordan before the Lord until he has driven out his enemies from before him, and the land is subdued before the Lord, then afterward you may return and be blameless before the Lord and before Israel, and this land shall be your possession before the Lord. But if you do not do so, then take note, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. Build cities for your little ones and folds for your sheepfold, and do what has proceeded out of your mouth.'" He exhorts them. He says, okay, that's fine. We'll go for this, but you better keep your promise. You need to keep your promise. You're making a promise that we're all depending on. And so you keep your promise, and if you help us conquer the rest of this land, then all of this is going to be yours. This is the deal. This is the backstory to what we're about to read now. Because now we're on the other side of them conquering all the territory. And so in chapter 22, verse 1, it says, "Then Joshua called the Reubenites, the Gadites, and half the tribe of Manasseh, and said to them," remember, Moses is dead. Moses is gone. Joshua is the guy that's in charge now. And so Joshua says to them, verse 2, "You have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, and have obeyed my voice in all that I commanded you. You have not left your brethren these many days up to this day, but have kept the charge of the commandment of the Lord your God. And now the Lord your God has given rest to your brethren, as he promised them. Now therefore return and go to your tents into the land of your possession, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you on the other side of the Jordan." So he says, go, return and go to your tents. These people have did what they promised. The rest of Israel has conquered all of their land, and he's ready to send them home. And it's been about 7 years since these guys have been home. I mean, it sounds like some of our troops, you know, going to Afghanistan and Iraq. And these guys have been away from home for a long time. It's been 7 years. There's about 115,000 of these men that are part of these 2.5 tribes. And they've been home. They've been apart from their loved ones for a long time. Verse 5, Joshua says, "But take careful heed to do the commandment and the law which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to keep his commandments, to hold fast to him, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul." He says, take careful heed to do all the commandments. Make sure that you keep doing what the kind of things that God wants you to do. It's kind of like a final departing word from Joshua. You guys keep following the Lord now, because we may not see you for a while. The Jordan River, they live on the other side of the Jordan River. Now, nowadays, when you come to Israel with me, the Jordan River is pretty small, pretty dinky now, because Lebanon, I don't know if Syria has figured out how to tap into this water yet, but Israel and Jordan, they all pull water from the sources of the Jordan River. And so the river is much smaller than it was back in those days. But we're still talking about days where there's no bridges over the Jordan. There's no crossing places over the Jordan. And to take a lot of people across the Jordan is quite a chore. In addition, the Jordan Valley is one of the lowest places on the planet. It starts at about 600 feet below sea level. That's where the Sea of Galilee is, 600 feet below sea level. And it goes all the way down to something like 1,500 feet below sea level. That's where the Dead Sea is. So this is one of the deepest gashes. What's it called? The African Rift? The Great African Rift? Something like that. I'm looking at Linda because she's been to Israel. She's been to Israel with me. And so it's one of the deepest places of the earth. I don't know if you've ever been to the bottom of the Grand Canyon. Is it hot or cold at the bottom of the Grand Canyon? It's hot. You go down in altitude, it gets warmer. The Jordan Valley is one of the warmest places in the earth. It can get very hot. It's in the hundreds all the time in the summertime. That's why we're going in November. But that's just the Jordan Valley. So there's lots of problems when it comes to going back and forth across the Jordan River. There's no bus system. There's no taking trains from one side to the other. There's no driving cars or boats across this thing. It's a bit of a difficulty to get across the Jordan River. And even though the law of Moses, remember, gang, we're talking 1400 B.C. No books, no radio, no TV, no internet. How do people remember and get taught about the things of God? How does that happen? Well, one of the things God built into their religious system was three times a year, I want you to, at least three times a year, show up at church. And they would teach the people during these holy days, the festivals, things like Passover and the Feast of Tabernacles and all, is during these times the people would be taught. But if it gets a little bit too hard to get there, what are you going to do? And so Joshua has this, he's got these parting words to these people who are about to go back to the other side of the Jordan. And he says, look guys, you need to remember to keep following God. I'd put the principle this way. Don't let anything keep you from serving the Lord. Don't let anything keep you from serving. We let some of the silliest things keep us from serving God. I mean, sometimes there's some pretty legitimate, serious stuff. You know, a heavy illness hits, you know, a death in the family, all that kind of stuff. Those are pretty heavy things. But sometimes it's just like, well, I don't want to miss my TV show, you know, I'm just a little sad today, I'm a little depressed, you know, or my boss yelled at me at work. I think those are probably the times that you need to be at church, you know, and yet we use those reasons, we use those excuses. Need to be careful about what we allow to keep us from serving God. I see this all the time. I see people get excited about God. And they say, oh, I just want to follow God. I want to serve God. You know, and where can I help out? What can I do? You know, and, you know, I don't like to tell people what to do. I really don't. When people come up and say, what can I do? It's like, well, I don't know. What can you do? But when people find a place and they decide this is going to be my thing, I'm going to try doing this. Oh, you watch out. You watch out. Things are going to fall apart. The Jordan River is going to rise. Temperature is going to rise. And you're going to get tested. My wife and I have seen this over and over and over again. When someone steps up to take on a ministry, haven't we, Susan? Susan's nodding very wisely. Oh, how many times have we seen this? All the time. Gang, don't let anything keep you from serving God. I know that there's things that are legitimate things. I get it. I'm not trying to lay guilt trips. But gang, sometimes our pain threshold is way too low. And sometimes we let the silliest little things. You know, somebody at church will hurt your feelings. I'm not going to go back there. I might run into that person. Well, poo on you. I mean, my gosh, are we that thin-skinned? We need to be men, except for the women. Women don't need to be men. You know what I'm saying? Don't let things keep you from serving God. That's kind of the whole gist of this whole thing. Hey, guys, you're going back to the other side. And it's going to be harder for you to get to church. So you make sure you do it. You make sure you don't stop serving God. Let's move on, verse 6. So Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went to their tents. Now, to half the tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given a possession in Bashan, but to the other half of it, Joshua gave a possession among their brethren on this side of the Jordan, westward. And indeed, when Joshua sent them away to their tents, he blessed them and spoke to them, saying, return to much riches to your... Wait, what did he say? He said, return with much riches to your tents, with very much livestock, with silver and with gold, with bronze and iron, with very much clothing, divide the spoil of your enemies with your brethren. Now, just one quick thing. It mentions the tribe of Manasseh. It mentions half the tribe. We've talked about this before, just so you don't get confused. The tribe of Manasseh was split in half, and half of them were located on to the right, on the eastern side of the Jordan River, and the other half was on the west side. So they're only sending away the side that's going to go to the east. He mentions to them, he says to these people, the two and a half tribes, he says, return with much riches. See, there's a lot of plunder when Israel conquered the promised land. It was, and for these two and a half tribes that were going back, it actually turned out to be quite a profitable venture to help their brethren out. They actually came back dragging all kinds of stuff with them. You know, they came back with coinage, with clothing, with cars. Oh, no, I don't think they had the cars, but they came back with stuff. They originally did it because it was the right thing. But in the end, it actually benefited them by going and helping out. Verse 9. So the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh returned and departed from the children of Israel at Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan, to go to the country of Gilead, that's the other side, to the land of their possession, which they had obtained according to the word of the Lord by the hand of Moses. Now, I just want to stop before we go on past this section. It's this whole idea, he says to them, they have kept the promises. They kept their word. And that's kind of a rarity in the Bible, actually. It just seems like so often people are not keeping their word. These people kept their word. God is so concerned, gang, that you and I be men and women who keep their word. I know we can't always keep our promises. I understand that. But gang, God wants His people to be known as honest people, as trustworthy people. Oh, how He wants us to be known by that. Jesus said this, but James also writes the same thing. He says, but above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no, no, lest you fall into judgment. Now, what's this talking about? See, some people have got to the place in their life where nobody believes them anymore. And they promise to do something. And have you ever had people like that in your life where they just promise you and promise you and promise you and never follow through? And so it gets to the point in their life where they have to do things to convince you that they're telling the truth, that they're actually going to do that. That's where the idea of swearing oaths come in. Well, may God strike me dead with lightning right now if I'm not telling you the truth. You know, and they come up with all these kinds of things. That's what he's talking about here. He's saying, don't swear these oaths. It'd be better that you and I be known as people whose yes means yes and his no means no. That when I say I'm going to do something, that more likely than not, I'm going to do it. That's what God desires for us, His people. Because, you know, we represent Him. And He keeps His promises. He wants His people to be the same. Now, there is another thing here. Keep your promises. They kept their promises. And as we talked about, they actually benefited by keeping their promises. They're hauling these treasure boxes back with them. Because there was a benefit with doing what they promised. There's a reward for keeping your promises. The reward may not always be in this life. So don't go saying, well, God, how come I didn't get rewarded because I kept my promise? Now look at me. Now it's just worse. No. The reward may not always be in this life. Sometimes it is. The reward will definitely, at the end of the day, when you stand before God, you will be correctly compensated. But there is a reward, gang, for keeping your promise. Just as a reminder, it's been a reminder for me. I did a wedding on Friday. Beautiful, gorgeous wedding. It's a lot of fun. Oh, there was my phone. It's somebody's Facebooking me. I got to turn my phone off. Somebody turn your phone off. Okay, I have to turn my phone off. Marriage is about keeping promises. We make promises to each other. And God wants to be men and women of our word. Whether it's hard, we hang in there. And you know what, gang? There is a reward for finishing well, for doing it, for keeping your promise. There is. I'm not saying marriage is easy. Marriage can be really hard at times. I get it. I must be the most difficult person to live with in the world. Can't even imagine why my wife stays married to me. She's a faithful woman. There is a reward for keeping your promise. There's a reward for finishing well, for finishing the race. Is the sound on? Let's try a video. Only get stupider as the night goes on. I'm sorry. God wants us to finish the race. Even when it's hard, even when it looks difficult, there is a reward at the end. Finish the race. These people are going back to their hometowns, and they're not going back empty-handed because they finished. They kept their promise. Chapter 22, verse 10. And when they came to the region of the Jordan, which is in the land of Canaan, the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh built an altar there by the Jordan, a great, impressive altar. So, these guys, on their way back, when they get to the Jordan, they decide to do something. They build an altar. It says, a great, impressive altar. This is a huge Texas size altar. Now, it's huge. An altar is like a barbecue. That's why I did a barbecue. It's the world's biggest Weber barbecue. There you go. Now, it's possible that this thing is big enough to be seen for miles around. That's the way the language is implied. That this thing was big. It was meant to be noticed. Now, normally, an altar is a place of sacrifice. And the problem with this is that we know from the law of Moses that this would be an illegal place of sacrifice. In Numbers, in Leviticus chapter 17, it says, also, you shall say to them, whatever man of the house of Israel or of the strangers who dwell among you who offers a burnt offering or a sacrifice and does not bring it to the door of the tabernacle of meeting to offer it to the Lord, that man shall be cut off from among his people. In other words, there's only supposed to be one place of sacrifice among the nation of Israel. It's at the tabernacle where the Ark of the Covenant is, which is currently at Shiloh, not at the Jordan River. So that makes this altar illegal. Are you following me so far? Okay, you follow, the plot thickens. Verse 11. Now the children of Israel heard someone say, sounds like a rumor, doesn't it? They heard someone say, behold, the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh have built an altar on the frontier of the land of Canaan in the region of the Jordan on the children of Israel's side. And when the children of Israel heard of it, the whole congregation of the children of Israel gathered together at Shiloh to go to war against them. Now, it says they heard someone say, So the trouble is going to start, and the trouble starts because they heard someone say. There's kind of a thing you're going to see in here, wars and poor communication. Sometimes the trouble we get ourselves into, the battles that we face, sometimes, gang, it's based in nothing more than poor communication. Communication actually is not that easy of a process. Because for communication to work, I've always looked at it this way. If I'm going to communicate something to Georgina, first it has to start, I have to think of something. That's the way communication starts. It starts in my brain. I have a thought. Then I have to express that thought. Now, it might be that I'm going to say something to Georgina. It might mean that I'll write her a note. I might send her an email. I could call her on the phone. I could do hand signs. I could give her expressions on my face. Lots of ways to express it. Are you with me? And then thirdly, Georgina has to receive the message. She has to have her eyes open if I'm doing hand signs. She's got to have a computer if I'm sending her an email. She's got to have ears that are listening if I'm going to talk to her. Are you following me? She has to receive the message. And then lastly, and just as important as anything, she has to decode it. You know, if I'm speaking to her in Portuguese, and she doesn't know Portuguese, well, she's going to have a hard time understanding what I'm saying. You know, if I speak to her in Russian, she's not going to probably, I don't think you understand Russian, do you? No, she doesn't understand Russian. If I speak to her in English, she has a better chance of understanding it. Of course, you know, I might screw up all along the way. I might not be really thinking clearly of what I'm trying to say. I might say it garbled, or I might, you know, maybe I'm upset at somebody, so I tell her this message, you know, and I'm not really mad at Georgina, but she hears my anger, and it gets all goofed up. You understand? So communication really isn't that easy. We kind of take it for granted. We kind of take it for granted that, because we're getting messages every day, we kind of take it for granted that we understand exactly what they are saying. Maybe not. Maybe not. Another video.
Hey, are you golfing today?
Yeah.
It's the second time this week.
But you said it was fine.
It is fine. It's perfectly fine.
Are you confused by female behavior? Wish you had a translator to understand what she means? Well, you're in luck. Introducing the Manslator, a revolutionary device that translates woman language into simple man words. Finally, the power to know what she means.
Okay, cool. Let me just check my wife. Hey, babe, a tea time opened up later. You mind if I go?
Fine, if that's what you want to do.
No go! Stay home!
On second thought, I think I'll just stay here with you and watch The Notebook.
Aw, how sweet.
Now that's more like it. The Manslator uses emotion deciphering technology to help you out of the toughest jams.
Hey, is everything okay? You sound upset.
Why would I be upset?
Forgot anniversary, jerk!
Oh, no way! Happy anniversary, babe.
You remembered.
Come on, of course I did.
Thanks to the Manslator's patented FemLogic processing chip, now any man can decode statements like...
Are you wearing that?
You change! Now!
Hey, do you want to get some coffee?
Me want coffee!
Do you think she's pretty?
You think she prettier than me?
Aw, you're such a good friend.
Me never date you!
I'm fine.
Me not fine!
I'll be ready in 5 minutes.
Me ready 13 minutes!
Do whatever you want.
You know do what you want.
Could you rub my shoulders a little bit?
No, hinky-panky! Massage. Be serious!
The Manslator even works on men. Finally, women can learn the deeper meaning of his words.
Whoa.
Your beauty is stunning.
Hey, mind if I catch a movie with the guys?
You are a lovely, wonderful woman who meets all of my needs. And even though I will miss you, this night I wish to see Death Cop 9 with my bros.
I'm fine.
I'm fine. Really. Stop looking at me.
The Manslator can even be customized, with voices of real celebrities being impersonated, like Yoda.
In much trouble you are. To the doghouse go you.
Or Mr. T.
Happy
kidding the fool who leaves the toilet seat up.
So get your manslater today. Clarity is just a phone call away.
You need by me.
You know, that's communication isn't all that easy, is it? You know, we're going to laugh at those things. Those are kind of like classic things. Oh, I'm fine. No, I'm not fine, you know. But we don't always get the message across. How can I communicate better? I would like to suggest that you install a warning system, an early warning system. If you're talking with somebody and one of you starts getting red-faced and getting upset, maybe you've misunderstood. Maybe you've miscommunicated. That's a good possibility. Maybe one of you has expressed it wrong. Maybe you heard it wrong. Maybe you understood it wrong. Proverbs 18:13 says, "He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him." See, that's the problem that we get into, is that we think we've understood what you've said, and then I respond. And I can't believe that you're doing that to me. I can't believe that you're saying that to me. And so I get upset, and I get back, and I'm going to say something to you, and I'm really upset and mad. And all the while, I've completely misunderstood without taking the time to understand, taking the time to hear. I wish I could install in all of us a warning system saying, maybe I've misunderstood you. Maybe you've misunderstood me. Try using feedback. There is no manslater. It does not exist. You have to work at figuring out what each other means. Though I did find a book. This is How to Understand Someone of the Opposite Sex. This is what the book looks like. just a little book. Okay, sorry. I just saw that one today. I thought that was kind of funny. It helps to take time to understand the other person. Sometimes learning to say, "I heard you say," you know, when I'm not quite sure I really get this whole thing, to say the words, "You know, honey, I heard you say that you are angry at me and you think I'm a big fat jerk. Is that what you meant?" And she'll say, "Where did you get that idea? No, I just said we're late for dinner. Let's sit down." To use those words, "I heard you say," back and forth to each other. Sometimes we just need to realize I may not be understanding this. Instead of getting upset. I mean, I can get upset. You know, maybe you do hate my guts and everything. Well, then I can get upset. No. You know what I'm saying? We got to work at communication. I think sometimes we assume that once we passed 3 years old, we understood everything. Not always. Things aren't always the way they seem. Now, it mentions that they met at Shiloh. Shiloh, back to our text. Verse 12, Shiloh has become the center of the government, the center where the tabernacle is, where the Ark of the Covenant is, but it's not on the Jordan River. It's at Shiloh is where the true altar is supposed to be. And they said, verse 12, the children of Israel heard it, and the whole congregation of the children of Israel gathered together to go to war against them. Kind of sounds drastic to go to war because somebody builds an altar. I mean, what's your problem here? I mean, shouldn't we have more religion? What's the problem here? Well, God had warned the nation about what happens when somebody comes in and starts to lead people astray. In Deuteronomy 13, He says, "If there arises among you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and he gives you a sign or a wonder, and the sign or the wonder comes to pass of which he spoke to you, saying, 'Let us go after other gods which you have not known, and let us serve them,' you shall not listen to the words of that prophet or that dreamer of dreams, for the Lord your God is testing you to know whether you love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul." God goes on to say, you have to put that person to death. if they're trying to lead you away from God. And so when these people have cooked up another altar, and they're already going against God's law, what are they trying to do? Are they trying to take people away from worshiping God? He goes on to say in Deuteronomy 13, verses 6 to 11, hey, even if it's a member of your family, he says you should put them to death. In Deuteronomy 13, verse 12, he says, if you hear someone in one of your cities, which the Lord your God gives you to dwell in, saying, corrupt men have gone out from among you and enticed the inhabitants of their city, saying, let us go and serve other gods which you have not known. Then you shall inquire, search out, and ask diligently, and if it indeed is true and certain that such an abomination was committed among you, you shall certainly strike the inhabitants of that city with this edge of the sword, utterly destroying it and all that's in it and its livestock with the edge of the sword. God is so serious that people stay worshiping Him and not getting led astray. So, with these 2.5 tribes doing this strange, bizarre behavior and building this illegal altar, what do they think they're doing? So this is the mindset of the people. This is the mindset of the folks back in Shiloh. They're thinking, oh my gosh, what is happening? No, verse 13, then the children of Israel sent Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, to the children of Reuben, to the children of Gad, and to half the tribe of Manasseh into the land of Gilead. And with him 10 rulers, one ruler each from the chief house of every tribe of Israel. And each one was the head of the house of his fathers among the children of Israel. Now, remember back in Deuteronomy 13, he says, if you hear about this stuff, well, then you need to search diligently and figure out what's really going on. Well, that's what they're doing. They're taking leaders from the different tribes. Phinehas is going to lead them, and they're going to find out what is going on. Phinehas, he's a guy with a reputation. He's actually next in line to be the high priest. His dad, Eleazar, is the high priest. His granddad was Aaron, the brother of Moses, the original high priest. That's this guy, Phinehas. He's a guy who's known with a passion for holiness. A few years earlier, 7-8 years earlier, there was a situation where the Moabite women were enticing the Israelite men into immoral sex and into worshiping the Moabite gods. And the result of the whole thing was that there was a plague that came on the nation. It was a horrible time. It was just like one of the biggest nightmares of the nation because of what had happened to these people. Well, when Phinehas was a part of that whole thing. He knew what was going on. And when he saw one particular man bring this Moabite woman into his tent, it says, when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, saw it, he rose from among the congregation and took a javelin in his hand, and he went after the man of Israel into the tent and thrust both of them through the man of Israel and the woman through her body, so the plague was stopped among the children of Israel. Now, if I was somebody in sin, I don't think I'd want Phinehas coming after me. You know? I mean, he's the guy who makes his point, so to say. But what did he do? He saved the nation. Because they were beginning to all run off one after the other, off the edge of the cliff. And Phinehas was, maybe he looked like a little bit too radical for you and me. But he kept the entire nation from going off the edge of the cliff. His action stopped the problem. And the problem stopped. He is a man who has a gift for peace. What do I mean? After the incident with at Baal Peor, this whole thing with the Moabites and all that kind of stuff, it says in Numbers 25, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, has turned back my wrath from the children of Israel because he was zealous with my zeal among them, so that I did not consume the children of Israel in my zeal. Therefore say, behold, I give to him my covenant of peace. And it shall be to him and his descendants after him a covenant of an everlasting priesthood, because he was zealous for his God and made atonement for the children of Israel. Now, it could be when God says, I give him my covenant of peace, maybe he's talking about the fact that he's made peace between God and man by his action. It could be talking about that. I kind of wonder if we're going to see more of that peace thing at work here in a minute. Because remember, they're going to war. Now, you might ask the question, is the nation wrong for even questioning what's going on? Maybe they should have just kept this problem to themselves and just said, well, they're adults. They can just do what they want to do. You know, it's okay if they build an altar. We're open-minded about these kinds of things. Maybe they overreacted a little bit, but actually they are correct in dealing with the issue. They're going to ask questions. They're going to figure out what's going on. And they're not overreacting a bit. They're learning to deal with things openly and talk about what's going on. If it's a misunderstanding, they're going to clear it up. Verse 15. Then they came to the children of Reuben, to the children of Gad, and to half the tribe of Manasseh, to the land of Gilead, and they spoke with them, saying, see, the altar's already been built. These people have already gone back home. They've settled in. So they go back into their hometown, and they say, thus says the whole congregation of the Lord, of Yahweh, what treachery is this that you have committed against the God of Israel to turn away this day from following the Lord, from following Yahweh, in that you have built for yourselves an altar that you might rebel this day against the Lord? This is the accusation. You're rebelling against God. What are you doing? What's this treachery? Phinehas knew that God didn't want the people setting up a lot of different altars because it would lead people into open idolatry rather than keeping the worship centralized at the tabernacle. Phinehas is afraid that these tribes are going down the wrong path. And so he lays the charge out right in front of them. Says, what are you doing? It looks like you're doing this. What are you doing? Verse 17, he says, is the iniquity of Peor not enough for us, from which we are not cleansed till this day, although there was a plague in the congregation of the Lord? Verse 18, but that you must turn away from this day from following the Lord, and it shall be if you rebel today against the Lord, that tomorrow he will be angry with the whole congregation of Israel. Now he talks about this thing, the iniquity of Peor. That's the whole problem with the Moabite women. With the Moabite women coming in and enticing the men and leading them away to worship the Moabite gods and all that kind of problem. And where he throws his spear, that was the problem. He says, don't you remember what just happened? I mean, I know it was like 7-8 years ago, but don't you remember what happened? Oh my gosh, for Pete's sake, what are you doing? It looks like to me you're bringing the nation down. He was there. He was right in the middle of it. Phinehas knows what he's talking about. What are you doing? Verse 19. Nevertheless, if the land of your possession is unclean, then cross over to the land of the possession of the Lord, where the Lord's tabernacle stands, and take possession among us. But do not rebel against the Lord, nor rebel against us by building yourselves an altar besides the altar of the Lord our God. Now, he says, if the land of your possession is unclean, I think he's thrown out ideas. We've been kind of sitting around trying to figure out what in the world you're doing. And somebody cooked up the idea, well, maybe they just don't like where they live. You know, and maybe they're just trying to stir up trouble because now that they've been in our promised land, maybe they're beginning to think that they got a raw deal. So they're just going to rebel and stir up trouble and cause problems and all this kind of stuff. Maybe they're acting out of jealousy for some reason. What's happening is that Phinehas is working to understand the problem. He's bringing up ideas. He's bringing up suggestions. He's trying to say, what's going on? Is it this? Is it this? Is it this? Because Phinehas knows he doesn't understand. It's that communication thing, gang. You see it happening in Phinehas. He's going, we just don't get it. We're thinking maybe it's this or maybe it's this. He's working. Sometimes we just make the mistake of thinking we have it figured out. I know why you are such an evil person. You know, and you're thinking, what? what? I'm not doing anything evil. I'm trying to follow God. You know, and I've just totally misunderstood you. I don't think it's wrong to make suggestions to the person you're talking to. But you also have to be open to the fact that you may be flat out wrong. You may be flat out wrong. Verse 20, he goes on with another idea. He says, did not Achan, the son of Zerah, commit a trespass in the accursed thing, and wrath fell on all the congregation of Israel? And that man did not perish alone in his iniquity. Now he mentions Achan. Achan is the fellow that, you know, when Israel had their first victory in the Promised Land, they crossed the river and they conquered that first city. Remember what the name of that first city was? They walked around and the walls came tumbling down, blew the trumpets, Jericho. Remember that? And God had warned everybody, because Jericho was like prime, it's like porno capital of the world. Maybe that'll put some ideas in your head. It's like Las Vegas on steroids. How about another idea in your head? And God warned the people, this place is bad. I got news. Okay, this place is bad. And when you conquer this place, because you're going to conquer this place, whatever you do, don't take souvenirs. Well, you know, I just want to, you know, Playboy is known for its artwork. No, it's known for twisting guys' minds. So God says, don't take this stuff. Well, a fellow named Achan, I found a picture of Achan. He's actually a pirate. He was burying the treasure. He took some treasure and he buried it in his tent, in his family's tent. His whole family was in on it. And he had a list of things, little souvenirs from Jericho. And the next time the Israelites went out to battle, God said, we have a problem here. Houston, we got a problem. And God let them lose their next battle because they just weren't paying attention. And they lost. And they said, God, what's wrong? And God said, there is sin in the camp. Somebody's sin is affecting the entire nation. You know, I'm so sad with the Schwarzenegger thing. I know he's just a Hollywood movie guy, and we can have all our excuses why it's okay. You know, but you think about his wife, you think about his kids, all his kids, and you think, what a mess. It cannot be undone. I mean, I'm not saying they can't be reconciled and they can't work it through or whatever, but you know what? This is stuff that's just, this is horrible. It's horrible. Our sin affects other people. And these are the things that Phineas is hinting at. All these situations, Baal Peor, a number of people got involved with the wickedness and the whole nation suffered. Achan tried to hide his sin and the nation suffered. My sin affects people around me. God has a concern for holiness. This is Phineas's concern. This is God's concern. God wants us to learn how to walk with Him. Peter writes, so think clearly and exercise self-control. Look forward to the gracious salvation that will come to you when Jesus Christ is revealed to the world. So you must live as God's obedient children. Don't slip back into your old ways of living to satisfy your own desires. You didn't know any better then. But now you must be holy in everything you do, just as God chose you is holy. For the scriptures say, you must be holy because I am holy. Okay? Jesus died for our sins. He died to pay for our sins. But He didn't die just to forgive us so that we go on and live merrily and do all the stuff that we've always done. He died so that we get a new start and that we get to learn to live away from the poison, away from the stuff that destroys our lives. He wants us to work at living farther and farther from sin. No, you're not going to get completely away from sin until you get to heaven. But you're not going to become sinless. But God does want us to sin less. He does. And so this is the heart of Phinehas. He's concerned about the people learning holiness. Verse 21. Then the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh answered. So they've got all these charges leveled at them. They're kind of going, whoa! They answered and said to the heads of the division of Israel, "The Lord God of gods, the Lord God of gods, He knows, and let Israel itself know if it is in rebellion or if it is in treachery against the Lord, do not save us this day. If we have built ourselves an altar to turn away from following the Lord, or if it is to offer on it burnt offerings or grain offerings, or if to offer peace offerings on it, let the Lord Himself require an account." You know, if we're doing this out of rebellion, let us have it. Pay attention to how they respond. They respond carefully. They could, and I think that you could say that they have a right to be upset. You are accusing me of what? How dare you accuse me of this? You're going to see that actually these people are the farthest from pagan people going out to doing their own stupid things. These are actually godly people, and they've got really, really cool reasons why they're doing what they're doing. And yet they're being accused of being backslidden, idol-worshipping pagans. Now notice how they don't respond. They don't respond, so you're going to make stupid accusations against us, huh? I see you're all armed to the teeth and ready to fight. You want to fight? Okay, go ahead, you know. They're not doing that. They're not doing that at all. Too many times we respond to misunderstandings like the Three Stooges. You know, that's about how we respond to things.
What's the idea? Sit down.
I can go on. I got 50 of them. Actually, the clip itself has 160 or so times of them slapping each other. Okay, I'll stop. You know, gang, it would be much better for us to slow down, to take a deep breath, and be careful how you respond when you are being accused of something. You don't have to do the Three Stooges act and go, "Ooh, he's going, yeah, you know, you slap me, well, I'll slap you back." Proverbs 15. Proverbs 15:28 says, "The heart of the righteous studies how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours forth evil." Too often, gang, we respond to misunderstanding, to miscommunication, by trying to, you know, we play tit for tat. You hurt my feelings. You don't put down the toilet seat, you know. Well, you did this the other day, you know, and you didn't do this and you didn't do that. Gang, slow down. Slow down. We get our pride hurt. Learn to swallow it. Learn to suck it up. And not return. I love the way these people respond. They say, "Oh my gosh, if you think that we're trying to lead people away from God, well, go ahead and kill us. Oh my gosh, but that's not what's happening here." Verse 24. "But in fact, we have done it for fear, for a reason, saying, in time to come, your descendants may speak to our descendants, saying, what have you to do with the Lord God of Israel? For the Lord has made the Jordan a border between you and us, you children of Reuben and the children of Gad. You have no part in the Lord." This is what they're afraid, that the Israelite, the other tribes, the ten tribes, that they're afraid that they're going to be saying this, that their descendants are going to be saying to the Reubenites and the Gadites, "Well, you don't have... there's this border between us. You're not part of us. You're not Israelites like we are. Can't you tell? Look, we've got this border between us, this river." He says, "You have no part in the Lord, so your descendants would make our descendants cease fearing the Lord. The eastern tribes are concerned that the natural barrier of the Jordan is going to end up causing a separation between these tribes. They're thinking in the future. They're thinking down the road because they know it's hard to cross back and forth. And they know that this is going to be a natural border between the tribes. Eventually, the Israelites on the western side might not recognize that they are related to the Israelites on the eastern side. They might even keep them from crossing over the Jordan and coming to worship God at the tabernacle. Verse 26. Therefore, we said, let us now prepare to build ourselves an altar, not for burnt offering nor for sacrifice, but that it may be a witness between you and us and our generations after us, that we may perform the service of the Lord before Him with our burnt offerings, with our sacrifices, and with our peace offerings, that your descendants may not say to our descendants in time to come, you have no part in the Lord. This thing is meant to be a witness, a testimony. The Hebrew word is aid. They're thinking big picture. They're thinking down the line. They're thinking that the natural flow of events is going to make it hard for us to communicate all the time. And we're afraid that one day you're going to say that we don't belong to you. There is no Wikipedia. There's no history books. There's no records of what has happened. 100 years from now, who's going to remember what happened during these days? Memories change. They've realized that man over time has the capacity to forget. And they're ensuring that in the future there will be something that reminds everybody that they belong to each other. That's why the altar is so big and impressive. They don't want anybody to miss the witness. The truth is, people remember things differently. And you don't have to wait for 3 generations for people's memories to change. I don't know if your family is like mine. My family, we've got parts of the family that won't speak to other parts of the family. Do you have families like that? We got that in my family. And there's lots of reasons for the problems. But some of the craziest thing is that there's always one event that people point to. Something that happened 30 years ago that was left unresolved. And you know what's the craziest thing? Is that the two sides remember the event differently. That's happened to you, huh? I don't trust my memory anymore. I don't. And even if I say, well, I don't remember it that way, I'm not quite sure if mine is the correct memory or not. That's why it's important, gang, to clear things up before the memories change. Don't let unresolved issues linger too long. It's one reason why Paul says, be angry and sin not. Don't let the sun go down on your wrath. Now, some people take this to the extreme that they make their wife stay up all night until she says, I'm sorry. You know, that's stupid. You know, sometimes you need to sleep on things. But the point is this, work at resolving it. Don't let it go too long. Because after a while, I'm going to start remembering things my way, and you're going to start remembering things your way, and it's really hard to reconcile. Don't let it go. Verse 28. Therefore, we said that it will be, when they say this to us or to our generations in time to come, that we may say, here is the replica of the altar of the Lord, which our fathers made, though not for burnt offerings nor for sacrifices, but it is a witness between you and us. They had made a replica. Apparently the eastern tribes had built this great altar to be a copy of the altar that was near next to the tabernacle, but just much bigger, and they wrote their name on it. And they said, all you have to do is look at this thing. It's got our name on it. Look, does it look familiar? Does it remind you of something? Well, of course, it looks just like the altar at the tabernacle. Now, they didn't really build an altar that looked like a Weber. They built it that looked like the altar at the tabernacle. Okay, enough with the joke. verse 29. Far be it from us that we should rebel against the Lord and turn from following. We know this, Phineas. We've walked with you, buddy. This last thing we want to do is to walk away from God, to build an altar for burnt offerings, for grain offerings, for sacrifices, besides the altar of the Lord our God, which is before his tabernacle. Now when Phineas, the priest, and the rulers of the congregation, the heads of the divisions of Israel who were with them, heard the words of the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and the children of Manasseh spoke, it pleased them. They went, big sigh of relief. You guys, you can put the weapons down. It's okay. It was a good thing to resolve the situation satisfactorily. And they resolved it through their words. They talked. They talked it out. They communicated. I was thinking of this verse about this. Proverbs 18:20, it says, a man's stomach shall be satisfied from the fruit of his mouth, from the produce of his lips he shall be filled. You know what happens to your stomach when you're in strife and struggle and anxiety with people? You know, your stomach's all in knots. But doesn't it feel good, gang, when it's been talked through and the hugs and the forgiveness? Because you worked it out? That's what's happening here. It's good to make peace with people. Verse 31. Then Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, said to the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, the children of Manasseh, this day we perceive that the Lord is among us, because you have not committed this treachery against the Lord. Now you have delivered the children of Israel out of the hand of the Lord. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, and the rulers returned from the children of Reuben and the children of Gad from the land of Gilead to the land of Canaan to the children of Israel and brought back word to them. So the thing pleased the children of Israel, and the children of Israel blessed God. They spoke no more of going against them in battle to destroy the land where the children of Reuben and Gad dwelt. The children of Reuben and the children of Gad called the altar witness. The word is for witness is what? Aid or ed. For it is a witness between us that the Lord is God. So they call it, well, in the New King James, it says they called it witness. And actually, that's in italics. The word witness isn't there. It may be that the actual name, it's a long Hebrew name, but it means it shall be a witness between us that the Lord is God. That's probably the name of the altar. Of course, they could have given it the shortened form and called it Ed. So they could have called it Mr. Ed. I don't know if it was like a talking altar or something like that. Sorry. We don't have, I wonder if we don't have a witness between us that the Lord is God. I was thinking about this. John 13:34. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, and that you also love one another. By this, all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. I kind of wonder if that isn't our witness, isn't it? It's a witness of who's among us. When we learn to love each other right, it's a sample of the God who loved us so much that he gave us his only begotten Son. May God keep that witness alive in us. Let's stand.